You're listening to Nick Luck Daily, bringing you the latest news and the best interviews from around the world of horse racing. This episode is brought to you by the Racehorse Owners Association, by Thoroughbred Racing Commentary's Global Rankings in partnership with the Saudi Cup, and by the Fitzdares Club. Good morning, it is Friday, April the 2nd, it is Good Friday, and more on the significance of racing on this day in the UK in just a moment. We'll also be reflecting during the course of this programme on the big news announcements we made on this show yesterday with Tom and Lee, the sponsorship of the Derby and the Oaks from online car retailer Cazoo, and also the announcement of a new micro-share syndicate, the Racehorse Club, which attracted a lot of debate on social media last night, and not all comments were favourable. I'll be canvassing the opinion of two syndicate managers a little bit later in the show, and I'll also be bringing you what I think is a really heartwarming interview with American-based owner Bob Nastanovich, who saw a horse run third in a Hexham bumper the other day. It's quite a story. James Willoughby is along later as well, with not only a look at the Thoroughbred Racing Commentary Global Rankings, but also a look ahead to the Santa Anita Derby and the Bluegrass Stakes this weekend, both of which will have a significant bearing on the Kentucky Derby itself. But, as I said, it is Good Friday, and you don't have to go back too long for there to have been a fevered debate about whether or not there should be racing in this country. Formerly, it was one of just two or three days in the calendar where there wasn't any racing. It was a rest day for stable staff. It was a valuable opportunity for big open days at Lambourne and Middleham. But eventually, with the promise of an outstanding all-weather finals day at Lingfield, the gates were opened and Good Friday racing started to take place. Now, does today's racing look like the racing that happened the first time we raced on this day? Or is this, as I welcome in Lydia Hislop, rather a not-so-good Friday?
Well, yes, it is, isn't it, if you look at today's cards. I think I might have said that the All-Weather Championships, the Marathon and the Fillies and Mares, had their smallest fields. In Newcastle, there's been a drastic cut in the prize money available, and the result is some smaller fields. There were two four-runner races. One's a listed race, one's a handicap. And a six-runner race and a seven-runner race. And at Chelmsford City, there are four races, I think, that are below the eight that you would need for a minimum of eight each-way betting. And the whole way in which Good Friday racing was pitched was that it would be a high-quality experience. Now, clearly, that is still the case at Lingfield today. It's that we're seeing a high level of horse racing. The races themselves should be very interesting and competitive, even. But if we look at it more widely, there have been better Good Fridays than this, and we wouldn't want something that was billed as being a high standard of racing that was going to be a particular event dwindling. You know, we know the reasons why. There's been a COVID context, but dwindling into a pretty ordinary Friday.
It doesn't take a genius, a mathematical genius, to work out that if your racecourse, if its business model is not based mainly on big crowds, if it has taken its full complement of media rights money since June the 1st, and if it has furloughed a huge amount of staff and has taken advantage of that government assistance, employment assistance scheme since last March, then its balance sheet probably looks pretty healthy.
Yes, and so you would put all of those courses into that category, wouldn't you? Newcastle, Chelmsford City and Lingfield.
You would. And if it was, as you were going to say, going to be a special day, a day which had to compete against what would normally be the big open days in Lambourne and Middleham, days when staff could have a day off potentially, then there has to be some good justification for it.
Definitely. And, you know, that's the whole point of it. That was the way in which it was pitched. I mean, this was, you know, the original idea behind Sunday racing as well. And that was, you know, allowed to dwindle. This cannot be. And I must stress, you know, it's still a high class day's racing at Lingfield on the all weather. But as a package, as a whole, this is not as good a Friday as we have been delighting in previous years and since the concept was launched. And I don't think that this should be allowed to dwindle. And I think that there should be questions asked about what the future plans at all of the racecourses that have the privilege of holding race meetings on Good Friday, what their future plans are for this day.
There was some good news yesterday on Maundy Thursday. It was, of course, April Fool's Day as well. An interesting day, I thought, for lots of new ventures in the sport to make public relations announcements. Did that occur to you?
Well, it did occur to me. I'll be honest. And there were a few that I actually checked just to make sure that they were kosher announcements. Yep, I did do that.
Was one of them that Cazoo, the online car retailer, was going to sponsor the Derby and the Oaks? Tom Stanley revealed that on this podcast yesterday, right when the news dropped around about 12:30. He and Lee gave their brief thoughts on it and had a day to digest it. What do you think?
Well, one of those was Cazoo, but having digested this, I think that was an unfair knee-jerk reaction on my part, because we are talking about a major upstart for going forward company based in the UK, set to be listed in New York with a $8 billion equity valuation. We're talking about a company that has a wide sports sponsorship portfolio, Aston Villa and Everton, the 100. The EFL, the English Football League, across 72 clubs, the Rugby League World Cup 2021, multiple snooker events. Why doesn't the Cazoo Derby fit in there?
Its CFO is Stephen Morana, who you and I knew when he was at Betfair, and he then was a director at Entain as well, the parent company now of Ladbrokes Coral. Is it always the way that if a horse racing event gets a sponsor, it has to have somebody in that company that is a passionate horse racing fan?
It does seem to be that, and you know, racing gets criticised for that kind of inverted commas nepotism. But I just wonder whether that's the way of the world. I mean, if you just look at the way the world is run, if we look at the way the relationships, the companies that did well under this government out of COVID, you ask yourself whether this is just how the world works. You know, if you are in with the right people, if the right people like you, are you more likely to be getting on? The answer, yes, and it has always been this way.
And do you think that this is a company that can, I'm going to use this marketing word and you're going to cringe, but can activate this sponsorship efficiently? You know what I mean?
I do. I suspect so, yes. I mean, you know, the founder, Alex Chesterton, also founded Zoopla and Love Film. These are people who are dynamic, and you'll laugh at me using this word, and agile across this space.
I'm not sure whether I find agile or this space more cringe making in that sentence.
Thank you. So I would imagine that I think it would be a really very good. I think it probably is a very good link. Actually, it's a modern, forward-looking brand, and I think it will be a good thing for the Derby. I don't see, I don't have any feeling of negativity towards it. It is just snobbiness. It's a bit like the Kentucky Derby sponsored by Yum Brands. That always used to make me cringe slightly, but that was probably just being snobby.
Yeah, when Vodafone took over the Derby, people were probably quite snobby about mobile phones, weren't they?
They probably were. Vodafone has its fair share of negative headlines, hasn't it, in terms of, you know, tax avoidance. Is one of the companies that has been looked at in that regard. It's track record in that area. So, you know, we should be looking at what companies actually do and the prejudice that we might have towards them.
Also announced yesterday on this podcast was the Racehorse Club. Now, when another micro share outfit launched itself with shares in one and whole ownership of another Grand National contender, I must confess, I didn't imagine it was going to create the storm that it did and the chorus of disapproval that it did. What's your view on micro shares generally?
I think that as long as the terms are transparent, as in the buyer understands what they are getting for their money, and that they can compare it with other ways in which they can spend their money in an open manner. So I think transparency is absolutely paramount. Then I think it is buyer beware. As long as nothing fraudulent is going on, if it is laid out to you what you are getting for your money and what the owners of the company are getting, or the managers of the syndicate are getting for providing that for you, then it is buyer beware. And you've got to assess what it is that you want to get out of having a share or some sort of interest in a racehorse, you know. And, you know, is it going to the races to see that horse run? Is it having a feeling that you're taking part in a very big, high profile race, which, you know, not every syndicate is going to be able to offer you? It is these sort of, you know, highly leveraged syndicates that are probably more likely to be able to offer you that. So you've got to weigh the upsides and the downsides. Is it going to the trainer's yard and being able to have that access? Is it having a newsletter, seeing videos? What is it that you want to get out of the money that you're putting in? It is buyer aware, as it is with everything. You know, if you do your research when you're purchasing anything, and then you can feel confident that you've made the right choice, provided that you have been transparently provided with the information that you need in order to make that choice.
Well, there wasn't universal approval for this. Craig Talbot runs the syndicate Ursa Major Racing. They have 18 horses in training that are syndicated. And Craig joins me now. Craig, what was your reaction to Racehorse Club?
And to me, it's completely wrong. It sends a wrong message about horse racing. We've had plenty of bad messages in the public eye at the minute about racing, and I think we just need we need people to kind of do the homework before they are advertising and kind of saying that this is a great idea. Like, it was on obviously your show yesterday, it was on the Racing Post, it was on Racing TV, and when you look at the figures and stuff, this shouldn't be something that people are advertising and sharing. It ultimately is. It's a con for a lot of money, and it's just a money-making scheme for people. There's so many good clubs out there that offer good value for money, and we can't get a say anywhere. And then you see, obviously, this come with money behind it. All the people that are kind of advertising it. And it for me, it's just wrong. It kind of, yeah, sends the wrong message. But it's also like kicking the teeth for us hard-working syndicates that like kind of are trying to make our name in the sport, doing it correctly.
Okay, so where we differed in terms of what we were discussing last night was that I was saying that it clearly, a group that's established, I don't know how this outfit's going to do, because they've only been going a day, so I've got no idea how many shares they've sold. You know, we're all presupposing they're going to be wildly successful. Nobody actually knows how many shares they're going to sell. But yeah, if I was to take the best known micro share group in the country at the moment, which is the owners group, I would say that if you look at how they've burgeoned and how many horses they've got, in spite of the fact they're charging a pretty chunky management fee, their customer satisfaction is clearly pretty good, and they're attracting a lot of people into the sport who only want to pay 50, 60, 70 quid as a one-off payment.
My own personal opinion, now, it's not great. I mean, what chance have you got to go and see your horse run and stuff like that? But it obviously it's there for a purpose, I think. I see it does do well, and they've got plenty of horses now, and obviously that is good for the sport. But obviously this new one is just, it's taken that and by 10 and just really taking the mick out of people, and it is just I can only see it is to make a quick few quid.
But are we judging them, Craig, on how much money people either are making or might make? We don't actually know what their overheads are. We don't really know what their gross margins are. Are we judging them on a presupposed profit margin rather than the customer satisfaction that they deliver and the idea that they're going to get more people involved in the sport, which is surely what we're all in the game for?
Absolutely, but why don't we judge them on this outrageous management fee that they've set? Because if anyone can tell me how they've come to that figure, or that's fair. I've been in horse racing and I've got 10 trainers. Yeah, that is absurd, and there's no defending it.
Tell me then about your ownership structure and about how it works for you and how it works for your members.
from our side, Ursa Major began in 2018. We got half a horse from Mark Walford called Cape Hideaway. That went and won on debut for us, and since then we've just kind of grown and grown. I ran the syndicate for free for 2 years, didn't take a penny out of it, and then in March of last year I got made redundant due to COVID. So we upped our fees from a massive £35 for 2.5% to £38.50, and now I get paid from the syndicate each month. And our fees are £38.50 to £40 a month for all our horses. We've got 18 in training, mostly with Mark Walford. We've got some with Adam West, some with Stephen Hanlon, Pat Murphy in Ireland as well. So, yeah, we are growing, like I say, and we like to think that we are the market leaders in, like, cost. Everything is at cost that we do, so there is no, like, there's no hidden fees or anything like that. You can simply earn a... have a horse with us for £38.50 a month for 2.5%, plus the purchase price, and it's like a real ownership. And like I say, we've grown, and people are getting behind it now. And 18 horses and growing. So
here's what I want to ask you, Craig. You're very reasonably priced, but you're looking at £400 a year. Yeah. Now, for your average man or woman, £400 a year is a lot of money. For anybody, £400 is a lot of money.
Absolutely, yeah.
So are you offering, do you think, say, 6 or 7 times the experience that you would get from being a 50, 60 quid one-off owner with, say, Owners Group? Are you offering 6 or 7 times that value?
Not unquestionably, because my owners get a say in the jockey. When COVID's over, they'll get to go to the race courses. If you get to go to the race courses 8 times, you've made that money up. You've made that money up, what you would have spent on a ticket. You get your tickets for free. You can't tell me with any of these clubs you've got any chance of winning a ballot when you've got 6,000 people in. You know, if there's a race ticket, if you want to go to the races, you get a ticket. Or if another one of our horses is running, you get a ticket to go to the club.
Is there not room for everybody? You know, I think what you're doing is fantastic, but I kind of think what the micro share syndicates are doing is equally important in bringing people into racing. Can we not have both? And does it have to be either or?
We absolutely could have both, but why not do it at what they've paid for it, instead of trying to make huge amounts of money off people? Why not do that at the real cost it should cost people? Fair enough, make a few quid, but don't take the mickey, for want of a better word. There's room. There's loads of horses at the lower level and at the top level. Every horse needs owners. There's absolutely loads of scope for everyone. Just what's frustrating for us, and our obviously lower level, we are at a lower level, there's no getting away from it, and we're trying to build, is we're doing good things, you know, at cost. We're not ripping anyone off for money, and we can't get a say anywhere. I couldn't say, oh, Ursa Major have bought this horse, be advertising it, would you like everyone to get shares? That wouldn't go on the racing post and racing TV. And then you see this man come up with this idea, and it's sped everywhere you look. And when people look into the costings, it's not great for the public eye of racing.
Well, you're on the Nick Luck Daily Podcast, Craig.
I think we've done all right today.
All right, Craig, thanks so much for talking to me.
All right, Nick, thank you.
So Craig thinking really that this is all a bit of a con. I wanted to canvas an alternative view from Jack Cantillon, or at least I think it might be an alternative view, because Jack runs his own syndicate, Syndicates.Racing. They've got a runner in the Grand National. Their model would be more similar to Craig's than Racehorse Club, but Jack's also a part of My Racehorse, one of the many owners of the Kentucky Derby winner last year in a micro share, which he advocated roundly last year on my Sunday programme on Racing TV. So Jack, you've seen the furore overnight. What's your take on it?
My take is very simple, Nick. I think we've, across the sport of horse racing, we've profoundly different syndicates. We have the Coolmore Syndicate, where they put together a massive amount of money every year, and they buy the best value, expensive horses they possibly can. We've syndicates just like Craig's Syndicate and like my syndicate, Syndicates.Racing, where you could have spent €210 and you could add a runner in the Grand National, and you would have a 1% equity interest, or an 1% interest in that horse. And but then you have also, I think there is a space for micro shares. Okay, Balco de Flow, if you Cabaret Queen for only double the amount of money, you would have 50% the amount of interest in the filly and probably a very, very similar chance. But what we're missing about this whole conversation is this isn't about the ownership level, it's about a participation level. When we think about the World Cup final and we think people buy tickets, 80,000 people, 100,000 people, very similar numbers to are involved in the racecourse club, they are doing it so they can say to their friends, I was at the World Cup final, I spent 400 quid to be there. This to me is a product that's about the experience. You come, you get the sent out a welcome pack, you get a digital experience of the updates. It's a profoundly terrible investment. We cannot get away from that. The numbers do not make sense. The numbers need transparency and the numbers need to be assessed by the BHA. I entirely welcome that. But what I also welcome is new ways to experience horse racing at a micro level. We cannot shelter ourselves and think that our experiences can be the ones of norms, which are the, you know, inaccessible amounts in thousands that people invest in horses. I think I have a more compelling product, and I very much welcome the Racehorse Club because I think it amplifies my product because people will look and compare and think we're much better. But at the same time, I do not deny that they have a right to existence, and I think they have a product that for some people they will find compelling, Nick.
Jack Cantillon, and before that, Craig Talbot. Now, I've always prided myself on a related theme here, that this podcast can unite disparate corners of the horse racing world. I'm not sure I've succeeded, but Bob Nastanovich surely has. Now, fans of 90s indie rock will know Bob Nastanovich as one of the founding members and key components of the band Pavement, since when much of his attention has been focused on horse racing. He was agent to the very successful Greta Kunzweiler, and he has got a deep love of not only British racing, but also British jump racing, as evidenced by the fact that his jumper, Dear Alex, finished third in the bumper at Hexham yesterday, and he joins me now from his home in Des Moines, Iowa. Bob, these glorious worlds have collided somehow, but how?
Oh, thank you very much for having me on, Nick. And best wishes from Des Moines. I met Emma Barry on, you know, people say what they want about social media. I met her on Twitter. I posted a tweet. My favorite Derby winner is Sir Percy. And I posted a tweet a while back, and she immediately messaged me and told me the story of her mare of Hope Is High, who I was actually aware of. And, cause I'm a bit of a British racing junkie. And so one thing led to another, and we became, you know, pandemic friends. One thing led to another, and I told her that me and my mate John, we've been to every British race course over a 20-year period, that we'd love to get in on a horse. And she basically, in her very gracious manner, got us in on Dear Alex, who she bred, and the wait's been long for her. But most people's idea of a dream come true is not to part own a horse who runs third in a Hexham bumper, but I'm more than satisfied with that.
And there is something so different about the racing that you've grown up with and really loved, and finishing third in a Hexham bumper. What is it about British racing that so attracted you, and in particular some of the say smaller race courses, the more idiosyncratic ones?
It all started for me in 92 when I first walked into a betting shop in London. I mean, I'd been to several Breeders' Cups and I'd seen marvelous performances. Royal Academy sort of sticks in the mind. So I sort of was enamored with the idea of like going to British race courses. And then Pavement afforded me the marvelous opportunity, because we were there so often in the 90s, to visit a few race courses. And I met my mate John MacArthur along the way, and we just came up with a crazy idea in the mid-90s to do all 60, which a lot of people think is an easy task. It's not, as you know. To be honest with you, like, you know, some of the best days of my life have been spent on British race courses. And again, it, you know, it took over 20 years and a lot of like skillfully planned trips, because obviously we didn't have any credentials. We actually snuck into a lot of courses. we would go in with the SIS TV crew and pretend that we were sort of with them.
And at this point, am I right in thinking that even though Pavement, the indie band that you founded and you've been a huge part of, even though you were probably in your peak in the early 90s, but perhaps people on British racecourses might not have been completely familiar with your work.
I think that's one thing about horse racing and Pavement, or horse racing and alternative rock in general. I think that you couldn't really ask for two completely wildly different worlds. So it was kind of interesting after Pavement to transition into a horse racing profession, because I'd say maybe like 1% of the horse racing industry has even heard of Pavement. So I couldn't really use that to my advantage. And keep in mind, too, that just in general, Pavement is better known in the UK than here. I think a lot of our influences were British, and we did a lot more touring there. So I think that we're probably, if we are a big deal, we're probably a bigger deal in the UK and continental Europe than anywhere else. But for me, before sound checks and before gigs, I would just really shut myself off and relax and enjoy like sitting in betting shops. Spent hundreds of hours in the William Hills on Newland Ave and Hull. I missed that. Traveling to the courses is just unbelievable. I mean, that horse running today at Hexham, my clear memory of Hexham is it's just like just a marvelous place for a race course. And it's like walking back in time. You feel like you're walking into like the 60s or 70s, you know. So you don't get that at American race courses very often. I mean, there are some special ones like Kentucky Downs and Colonial Downs and stuff like that, but sort of, and obviously Keeneland's beautiful. They're just really highly unique places.
So listen, tell me about the debrief with Dear Alex. How did John and Emma feel that he ran, and what's the plan?
Well, first of all, with him, I think that I really can't even begin to start to tell you how great it is to have a horse with them at Beverly House. John and Emma are just such great communicators, and they're extremely, I mean, I've been blessed to own or part own horses for 25 years, probably with about a dozen different American trainers. And I've had good relationships with just about all of them, but owning a horse with them is really special. I mean, the documenting of everything that happens is brilliant. But they're just, in the case of this particular horse, he's obviously required an amazing amount of patience. First time starting 6-year-old. Now, of course, he's really not bred to come to hand until he's 4. And so the wait has been long. You know, I'm a bred the horse. The game plan at this point, I mean, off of that run, we're all completely thrilled, including the jockey. Will Kennedy rode a great race, who's a terribly underused rider, very talented jockey. So I'd like to see him get more opportunities. But now the plan going forward is hopefully to get one more run. I know there's a bumper at Hexham in a few weeks' time. One more run before summer jumping is not going to suit him at all. He'll definitely need plenty of cut, and that's the first thing that the jockey said afterwards, and he'll need further. So we'd like to get one more run at a bumper, and then hopefully look forward to, you know, the winter months when he can use his stamina to better effect.
Bob Nastanovich there, what a great story that is. And now news coming through about Tiger Roll and his likely next target. Eddie O'Leary, brother of Michael O'Leary, owner of Jigginstown House Stud, joins me on the line now. Eddie, where's Tiger Roll going to go? Is he going to go to Ferry House for the Irish National or Aintree for the Betway Bowl?
He goes to the Bowl, Nick.
What was the thinking?
Probably for next year, just so the handicapper has to see him, so let him see him.
Okay, and did...
He seems to dismiss Irish one, so let him see him there.
He might have seen the Irish National, to be fair.
Well, I don't know, and he goes for the ball.
Okay. All things being equal, do you actually think he's got any kind of a chance in the bowl?
No.
Okay. None at all.
Oh no, as in like he's too high. He's now taking on good horses. Although I think this year the Bowl might not be that strong a race. But he's taking on good horses now.
Okay.
You know, rather than handicappers and cross country horses.
Okay, so you want to let Martin have a look at him in the Betway Bowl. We'll see him there. I'm pleased he's coming to Aintree anyway, because
yeah,
you know, at least we're going to see him.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
What about the horses you are going to run in the Grand National? How many are you down to?
I would say four or five. Milan Native, Farmer Class, Shattered Love, and Tutor Premier. Maybe one more gets in.
Okay. Will Jack Kennedy take the pick of those?
Jack had the pick of the three of Gordon's three.
Yeah, of Farclaw, Milan Native.
Milan Native and Shattered Love.
Okay. Would you expect him to be on Farclaw?
We're probably disappointed about the way Milan Native ran in Cheltenham. He'd probably wear a bit of headgear here. But before Cheltenham, he would have been our main national horse.
Okay.
But you'd be a bit disappointed without the headgear in Cheltenham, but he'd have headgear on here and we go from there. But Jack, it'd be Jack's choice between Farmer Class himself and the mare.
And then you'll sort it out after that.
Yeah.
Okay, brilliant. Thanks a lot, Eddie.
Okay, thanks, Nick. Thank you.
Cheers. It's Friday, which means it is time for the Thoroughbred Racing Commentary Global Horse Rankings, and I will give you an updated, and there are several updates as well, top 10 of the active horses in training. And right the way up to number 10 now is the runaway Dubai World Cup winner Mystic Guide, trained in the United States by Mike Stidham. At 9 is Stradivarius. Yes, he is back. We will see him in a bid for a fifth Gold Cup later in the season. 8 is Monomoy Girl. 7, Very Elegant, after a victory over Adabe in the Randvet Stakes at Rose Hill. 6, Chronogenesis, a valiant effort in defeat behind Mishrif in the Dubai Shima Classic. At 5, Gran Allegria. 4 is Tanawa. 3, a Japanese star, Contrail. Can't wait to see that horse again. And barreling up to 2 now is Mishrif with this extraordinary spring double. Will he replicate it in the autumn, I wonder? And still holding his position at 1, the Hong Kong superstar Golden 60. To reflect on those changes, I welcome in James Willoughby, because it is Friday, James, and you fancy the international season is really starting to hot up. Now we've got the Dubai World Cup meeting safely under our belts.
Yeah, that's a perfect summation. The momentum now gathering in international racing all around the world, and some tremendous stuff to look forward to. Last week's Maidan meeting, very patchy indeed, I must report, in places. Some of the races well below the historical standards you might expect of such richly endowed races. But I would say a quality winner of the Dubai World Cup in Mystic Guide, even though questionable as to what was behind him. But his profile now really pointing upwards. And I think the whole meeting basically carried, wasn't it, by this wonderful Shima Classic and a tremendous piece of training, campaigning from the Gosdens in Mishrif. Incidentally, I think 2 Gosdens is becoming a little unfair.
Well, imagine if Aidan O'Brien had just simply joined forces with Joseph and Donica, and you'd have had 3 O'Briens versus 2 Gosdens.
Well, he may have to, if things carry on at this rate.
Well, as you say, James, Mishrif beautifully prepared by John and Thady Gosden. Now, last week in this slot, you predicted there would be very little between him and Chronogenesis. Do you think the result was a fair reflection of their relative abilities?
Oh, now, that is a very good question. I would love to see a rematch, because for all that Mishrif was a thoroughly meritorious and deserving winner, I thought that it wasn't the cleanest of contests. We saw a barging match between the 2 Japanese runners in the straight. Yuichi Kitamura on Chronogenesis, I think, would like that one back again. I don't think he quite got to the bottom of his mare there. But needless to say, Mishrif had his disadvantages too, coming from a wide draw. And I think now that his interesting horse, Mishrif, he's won a 1.25 dirt race and a 1.5 turf race. And I think neither are his ideal conditions. I don't really think he fully stays 1.5 myself. I think his best trip is going to be 1.25. I base that on his pedigree as well. And I don't really think he's a dirt horse. I think, so as I said before on the show, that I think that Saudi Arabia is not a perfect replication of American dirt. And I think it's much more favourable to European turf horses. So he's going to come back to Europe. And once again, it seems to me that Gosden's are making the perfect step in aiming him at races around a mile and a quarter in the European season. So much more to come from him. And it sets us up perfectly for some nailing good middle distance events.
Let's talk about the rest of the Dubai World Cup card, if we can. And Mystic Guide has shot up the rankings. That was an authoritative performance in a subpar edition of the race.
That's a perfect way to put it. Mystic Guide is one of those horses that, although he hasn't beaten a lot in terms of kind of his opponents, if you look at his wins as he's come through the system, he's doing it with a lot of authority. He's very impressive at Oaklawn. It was only a Grade 3 race, the Razorback Handicap, that he won, but he won by 6 lengths, and he seems much improved. And beating Tua Wizard, who's got some good form back in Japan. This is a son of Ghost Zapper out of an AP Indy mare, so he's liable to get a lot better with age. He's only a young four-year-old now. Michael Stidham's got him pointing forwards. And by the end of the season, we might be really referring to this horse as a genuine world-class animal and a real contender for world number one. He stands in our overall charts now at number 11. That includes horses who, of course, are not in training anymore. As the list you read out with horses who are still in training. Sorry, number 15 he is. And he was the second best winner on the night behind Mishrith, I thought. And a horse that we're going to need to know more about.
So in terms of active horses still in training, Mystic Guide is 10th. One place above him in terms of active horses still in training is Stradivarius. I just wanted to come to him because if the Dubai meeting told us anything, it told us that he might have a meaningful foe in the Gold Cup in the shape of Subjectivist. How do you read that?
I thought that was perhaps the most uplifting point on a card that needed some mental ballast given what happened later in the Golden Shaheen, sadly, because this was Mark Johnston, a trainer that we all have got to know over the years extremely well in terms of his signature training methods. This was he and Joe Fanning, his trusty rider, at their absolute zenith in the way this horse was prepared off a 5-month layoff, 4,500-mile trip, which we take for granted these days. And then Fanning, probably the ride of his life, I would say, in terms of efficiency. You cannot ride a horse more efficiently than he did Subjectivist, basically passing through every single point on the course in terms of sectionals absolutely perfectly. And as a result, his mount absolutely loved the experience and sets him up now for a challenge against the mighty Stradivarius. At the moment, you can't really say he's done enough to be confident he can turn over the great stayer. But styles make fights, as they say. And this is the perfect one because Subjectivist is a typical Johnston sort of prominent racer, front runner, who will just keep on pouring it on. He's got a rider that understands him at the atomic level in Fanning, who is massively underrated over the years. And then a horse in Stradivarius who likes that type of opponent, who likes to be drawn to the end of his ability and pounce on horses that set the race up for him. So I cannot wait for a race like the Ascot Gold Cup and the Goodwood Cup after that. It's needed some life in that division. Stradivarius has got away with it too easy for too long. And in such a Subjectivist, he's got a horse that's going to put it up to him.
In Australia, Adabe tasted defeat behind Very Elegant. She reversed the form from last year's Ranvet. She did so, I thought, quite authoritatively. Now, there were apparently a few excuses for Adabe, but this is a very smart mare.
Oh, absolutely. Chris Waller, her trainer, has this pattern where he improves and improves and improves horses over a number of seasons. Winx wasn't absolutely brilliant straight away, after all. And as a result, some of these horses can rather creep up on you in that you think you've got them pinned down at a certain level, and they could just move to that next level. And I believe this mare, Very Elegant, has done that. I think for most of last year and the year before, you'd have fairly pinned her down in international terms as a good, solid Group 1 winner who was prolific and getting better, but wasn't a horse you thought could challenge for a race like the Arc over here, wasn't a prospective global champion. Now I think all those previous impressions must be changed because she travels now brilliantly. She's very strong at the end of her races. She's got everything, every weapon that you could want to take on the best. And I think she now is a real Galactico in terms of ability.
And just looking ahead briefly to this weekend, key pointers to the Kentucky Derby in the shape of the Santa Anita Derby, where we've got horses who finished in behind the sadly sidelined Life is Good last time in the San Felipe, and we've got the Bluegrass Stakes, which sees Essential Quality, the Breeders' Cup Juvenile winner, take his next step, his final step en route to the Kentucky Derby. If he wins, he will be a heavy favourite for the Run for the Roses.
Yeah, spot on. Yeah, two interesting contests. The Santa Anita Derby needs to bring clarity to the West. As you say, the second, third, fourth and fifth from the Grade 2 San Felipe, that's Medina Spirit, Dreamshake, Roman Centurion, the Great One, do battle to see if they can improve on what they've done before. And there's a bunch of really impressive maiden winners, Otto the Legend and Defunded and others. Defunded, a Baffert horse that was very impressive in a maiden. But they have only just won maidens or allowance races, and so they've got plenty to prove there. But loads of really interesting horses going up against some horses with proven group race form. But in the Bluegrass Stakes, a horse that's already made it and is by far the most talented horse in North America, in my opinion, in Essential Quality, Brad Cox's runner. On our computer race ratings, we have him rated 119 twice. That's by far the best amongst the three-year-old crop. This race is not a pushover for him. He's ranged again against Keep Me In Mind, the Breeders' Cup third, who won the Kentucky Jockey Club Stakes subsequent to that. And he's a real stone-cold closer, really fun horse to watch, comes from well out of it. And Ron Bauer, who was fifth in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, is another horse to be reckoned with in the Bluegrass. But this is about the real setup race for the Kentucky Derby for Essential Quality, who's our world number 32, which is extremely high for a young three-year-old at this point in their career. So it's all about, can he get it done and set up a bid for the first Colts Classic over there in America?
Thank you to James and to Bob and to Craig earlier on. Lydia is still with me. Lydia, I want to close by talking about Aidan McDonald, the young jockey who's in a critical condition in the James Cook Hospital in Middlesbrough. This sounds a deeply harrowing experience for all those involved yesterday when he was taken ill.
Yes, he had a fall some time ago, the 18th of March, on a mare that was running at Hexham. But then he collapsed in Middleham on Wednesday, and he's got a suspected carotid artery dissection. His parents have understandably asked for privacy for their 21-year-old son. Well, we wish him well and very much hope that he makes a full recovery. Andrew Bacon was praised by Mickey Hammond. Mickey Hammond is Aidan's boss. He's been riding work for Mickey since 2016 and recently got his license out via him, has ridden three winners. But Mickey Hammond made the point that Andrew Bacon, the former rider who now works for Mark Johnson, stayed with Aidan the whole time, cradling him after he collapsed and making sure that he was okay before the medical professionals took over. And he also mentioned Tony Hewson at the village shop there. So a shocking incident for the close-knit community that is Midlam. And we very much wish, you and I certainly do, and everybody listening, I'm sure, Aidan McDonald and his family well.
Lydia, just a tip for today now.
Right, you're going to think I'm crazy. I'm going to suggest to you Yasaman in the 3:45 at Lingfield.
We saw a lot of Yasaman last year.
We saw a lot of him finishing second. I just think he's the wrong price. I think he's got pretty much comparable form to horses that are far shorter than him in the market. I like the fact that the headgear is going back on, it having been off the last twice. I thought he ran perfectly well at Wolverhampton in December. I think there are reasons why the race wasn't run to suit, the trip wasn't right, where he didn't run so well, admittedly at Lingfield, when we saw him at the start of last month. But I just think he's the wrong price. So it is an each-way bet because this is Yasaman, but he's about 14-1 in the 3:45 at Lingfield today.
Lydia, thank you very much. Thank you very much for listening. We will see you back after the weekend. That was Friday, April the 2nd. You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you in association with Fitzdares, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary. Thank you.